When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What's good, Internet? It is Friday, October 26th, and you are listening to probably the only gaming podcast coming out today that will not have Red Dead impressions.
It's probably a choice. We decided, it's kind of like when they launch like a drama against a Marvel movie. It's like you're just trying to get a different audience. That audience is out there, and we said, we don't want traffic.
We hate it. We hate traffic. No, we just didn't get code. Who knows? Again, we might get code a minute after the embargo hits.
A cowboy could ride up on a horse to our office.
Can you believe this motherfucker said that elves make the games? Can you believe it?
Dobby was busy.
No, okay. I'm serious. Did you see this quote?
Dobby dies, though.
Spoilers.
Dobby died?
Dobby sucked. Yeah.
Dobby.
All right, we don't need to get into the Dobby discourse. Also, isn't it Dobby?
I don't know.
Adobe? They make software.
Different. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Different quote.
I can't believe I'm doing this again, but the quote from today's GQ article is...
Oh, welcome to yet another Rockstar article, part
Sam
three.
Sam and I talk about this a lot, and it's that games are still magical. It's like they're made by elves. You turn on the screen, and it's just this world that exists on TV. I think you gain something by not knowing how they're made. And then I'll finish the quote. The quote does end. As much as we might lose something in terms of people's respect for what we do, their enjoyment of what we do is enhanced, which is probably more important. Their joy is more important than their respect. Oi!
That's
Austin.
The sound of me dying, just like Dobby dies.
Uh-huh.
Clearly respect, not a huge priority for whoever wrote that line.
God. I'm Austin Walker. Joining me today, you've already heard the wonderful voices of Rob Zachney.
Hey, what's up?
Danielle Riendo.
Hi.
Natalie Watson.
Hello.
And Patrick Klepek.
Laura, Dobie, Dobby.
Dobby, yeah, tomato, Dobby. Tomato. Let's call the whole thing off.
Dobby.
You say that quote, Dobby. I'm ready to.
And I say, yeah, honestly, yeah. You know what makes me want to quit everything is Subterfuge, a game that has technically, my hand computer says that game only began a few minutes ago. But I think, Rob, you and I know that it actually began hours ago.
Yeah, I've been playing since dawn.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to set up what this is and why we're talking about it briefly today?
Okay, so Subterfuge is... We talked about this a little bit before on the show, so apologies if this is old hat to you. Subterfuge is a mobile game that has a lot in common with the board game, like Diplomacy. It's a strategy game that's... The rules are very simple, but the main mechanic is interacting with other players. It's creating these alliances, negotiations, and there's nothing in the game that helps you enforce any agreements you make, so betrayal is always a possibility.
In other words, you can't say, oh, we're allies, so my ships can't hit your ships. My ships can always hit your ships. There's only your word to go on.
Right. Wow. This isn't Civ where, like, oh, we're friends now. My ships can't even enter your territory. Somebody can always, like, stick a dagger in you. And because combat is basically completely predetermined, like once you launch subs, you'll see what the outcome of the combat is going to be and the exact like mathematical formula that's going to determine who's going to survive and take the outpost. That means that there's not really like tactical maneuvering you can do to give yourself a leg up. You can buy hero characters that tweak certain outcomes in combat and they become important. It's valuable to know how to handle them, but predominantly the way you guarantee success is to make sure that you're not left holding the bag when the game of like Alliance musical chairs wraps up and everyone makes their first moves. Now, what's interesting about this game is that this is a group of people that largely have played together a bunch before. This group broke up because they played together so much that there was a metagame that was becoming unbreakable. Everyone knew each other's play styles. And so every game had this weird context informed by every other game this group had played together. Now we're all playing anonymously, and none of that history matters. And
also, I'm
with
here
each other.
Now.
Yes,
I'm going to throw a wrench into everything.
Everyone is here.
We decided to do this as a donation incentive during our Florence Project fundraising stream, our marathon earlier this week or last week.
Last week.
Time is wild, isn't it? And as part of that, we are going to do a series of blog posts and probably a wrap-up podcast about our experiences. I've already begun writing my daily reports yesterday before the game even began.
What?
Day zero. I wrote a day zero post.
Okay. Because
I had to be like, I don't remember how this fucking game works. What am I going to do? I'm fucking screwed. And then I had to be like, oh, no, I got it. I remember how this works.
Wow.
I'm
so excited.
The thing that's amazing is, the game technically, again, started, this past hour. But you get a look at the map hours before that and can immediately start talking to people. And so my morning has been a lot of meetings. I've been a lot of chats with people, both in the office and in my underwater sea kingdom.
The real office. The truest office.
And the only thing I want to say, I'm saving a lot for these blog posts, which you can look forward to over the next week or two. Also, that's the other thing we didn't say. This game is not a game you play for a day. This is a game you play for over a week, 2 weeks. What was the longest one? Was 2.5 weeks for you, right, Rob?
Yeah. 2.5 weeks would have, I'm not sure I've ever seen a game go 3.
Okay. So
usually the acceleration hits, at the end of week one and you start to wrap up.
Okay. Only a week of my life is going to be dedicated to this thing that's always on with submarines attacking me at 3 a.m. and 4 a.m.
Are you going to win this because you're an insomniac?
It might. It helps. It helped me the first time I played. All right. 100%. All right. I only want to add one thing, which is at some point I wanted to look up the hero characters, the specialists that Rob mentioned before, and be like, is there a tier list? I have every 4 hours you can recruit a new one. You kind of get a random hand of 3 of them to pull from. They do things. They do all sorts of things. I'm not going to say what they do because I don't want to tip my hand and show the psychology of what I have to choose from in case Rob makes a play against me in the next few years or next few minutes, years. In my mind, we're playing for keeps. but I did look up a forum thread and I was like, oh, what's the internet have to say about this? And there's back and forth and oh, this is better than this, or you could try this, you could try this. At the very bottom, there was just a single note. There was a single post that was not in response to anything else, and all it said was, do it, Jesus Christ, just do it. And all right, good, I'm glad I got a preview of my, I'm pretty sure the end of this is I go back in time and make that post. Wow. That's what I'm pretty sure the end of all this goes. That is my personal nightmare scenario currently, and I'm excited to tell this story together.
I think what's funny here is that I've become so accustomed to relying on that metagame, knowing who people are, to guide my actions. There's always a Capizzoli, and...
Right. Is he in this? That's the other thing. I don't know who's in this group.
No, so Capo did not join this game, which means that you're not going to have somebody basically, crash out over, a really dumb betrayal.
I don't know. I'm here.
That's true. But... So there's none of that to guide our actions. And so I'm finding myself doing psychologically is I'm narrativizing everything and trying to find reasons to turn against someone. And it's turning me into the Montresor of subterfuge, right? Where literally somebody doesn't respond to a message 100%. Promptly. And I'm the thousand injuries, the Fortunato I had borne as best I could. And I'm getting ready with the brick and mortar. And that's
Rob,
me, right?
Rob, I've already made these notes. My day one thing is my opening messages are a mix of productive and frightening, and then a breakdown of various conversations in which some of them are ideal because we quickly negotiate borders and what we want to trade, and then someone else is short and terse and is just yeah, I'm taking this, I'm doing this. And then a third person just hasn't responded.
Sounds
and that's
like
the
a
most
Rob.
Terrifying thing. Of all, no, I think Rob's a negotiator. I don't know. I suspect we could play through this whole game and in the end learn that Rob and I have worked hand in glove without ever having known, or become bitter rivals that have never spoken but have been orchestrating things in our various corners of the map.
I could see that.
That's the dream.
My agenda, though, my real agenda is to go big or go home quickly. That's kind of my, like,
yeah.
I want to be in this thing or I want to be taken right the fuck out.
That's my agenda in life, honestly. we should talk about games that other people are playing and not just this nightmare we've put ourselves in for charity. Shout outs to the Florence Project.
Did it
Project.
For charity, yes.
I did it for a great cause. Shout outs again to everyone who helped make that possible. I know I'm just still in the afterglow of and like the like weird emotional drop of not doing it. Because like, it's like when you're doing a stream like that, some part of your brain is like, well, I guess this is it. I'm just doing this for the rest of my life. This is what 100%. A day is.
Yeah. It's a survival instinct.
Yeah, totally.
You run on adrenaline, and totally. That's how it works.
So I'm still coming down from that. I'm still fighting a sickness. But that didn't mean that I didn't make time last night to play the first beta session of Fallout 76, the new multiplayer survival crafting game from Bethesda that takes place in the Fallout world. Ask me anything about Fallout 76.
So Bethesda promised that beta was so unstable it would murder your family, right?
I had no problem. I had some animation issues, but it was fine.
Okay.
Natalie.
Are there zombies?
There are like so many zombies. In fact.
What are they like?
They're called Scorchers. Ugh. Or Scorched. They're called the Scorched.
Ooh.
And they're just ghouls, but they're like, that's weird, man. So you start off in Fallout 76. You started in Vault 76, which is in West Virginia. And the premise is, you know how all the vaults, have y'all played Fallout games in the past? You know, the vaults were like sold or rooms in the vaults were sold by Vault Tech for people to survive in and outlast the rest of the nuclear fallout and to then like let people back out into society. Fallout 76, each vault has a premise where like one of them will be, hey, there's a place where we want to see what the effect of music has on people. So we're going to like turn this into a test lab. Almost all of them are weird test labs. The Vault 76 premise is, hey, we need people out there immediately to try to reclaim the world for Vault Tech. It's like Vault Tech's play at becoming a national power.
Oh, wow.
And so the premise is 25 years. Also, they're like, oh, also, we're pretty sure that locking people in the room for 100 or 200 years will fuck them up and will fuck culture up because people will come to rely on the vaults and all of, like, the free water and free food and, like, the basic structure of society and won't want to go back out into the world and want to stay in here.
So they're
forever.
Not asleep?
No. Only in four. In four, you get cryostasis.
Right.
But the bulk of vaults in the Fallout world are all like you live in there.
I didn't realize
you like
that.
Hang out, you have
generations
families.
Of people.
Yeah.
Like, live
four
in
New Vegas are the only ones I've played.
Yeah, so there's some in New Vegas where you can find the like, oh, in this one they did a bunch of like like gardening experiments and stuff. And it's a lot of like bottle episode-y, like big idea, like almost like Star Trek episodes.
Yeah.
Like, on this planet, this is the mobster planet. And so you will straight up find the mobster vault where they put all the mobsters.
Wow.
That's in Fallout 4 100%. And so in this, the premise is like, we don't want people to rely on the vault. And also we want them to quickly go out, claim the nuke sites that are in West Virginia and take over the country for Vault Tech.
After
25 years. And so you're a colonist who goes back out into the wilderness, and it's the weirdest fucking thing.
With your friends.
With your, well, yeah, you can. I didn't play with any friends because I don't have any because I'm playing Subterfuge now, and all I have are allies and enemies. No friends allowed. And so it's weird. Like, I don't know what you come to Fallout for. I tend to come to it for storytelling, for weird characters, for interesting locations. And in my 3 hours with this game, or 4 hours or whatever, it was like from 7 to 11 last night, there are some characters who show up via audio logs. You kind of start to, you go out into the wilderness and you immediately see that like, oh, no one is alive. There are no human encampments. There are robots. There are audio logs. There are computers with diaries on them. There are people who lived through the bomb blasts and who tried to help other people and have since died. And there are lots of dungeons. There are lots of the like Fallout style of like, oh, this is a power plant. Oh, this is an auto factory, and it's been overtaken by zombies or by robots. And that's
the two things,
zombies and robots. And it's super weird to play a game like this where, this is a settlement, and the only characters there are other people in Vault Tech jumpsuits who are running around doing the barf emote. And it's just, like, not doing it for me.
I played more of Fallout 3 than maybe, like, any other video game in the last 10, or it's been more than 10 years now, right?
Just about 10, I think.
But about to, whatever. Like, I, you know, like 150.
Yeah,
like just an enormous amount of time spent, you know, 120 plus hours in Fallout New Vegas. I just don't do that with video games. Fallout 4, like, I actively disliked. It was nothing about it I found interesting despite spending 60 hours looking for something to enjoy. I didn't like the storytelling. I didn't like the base building. Like, it just, the game turned me off. And I've wanted to be interested in this, but I've since just decided it's not, nothing about this is for me. That if I was to boot this up, I would be doing, it kind of sounds like what you did for 3 hours, which is like desperately searching for the game I wanted them to build before I just realized after 6 or 7 hours that they didn't make that game. And I just need to punt on that and go find something else to play. And I bet there will be amazing stories written about cool things that happened in Fallout 76 that I'm excited to play and excited to read in the way that I theoretically think EVE Online is interesting, but have no interest in the actual mechanics and like interacting with it. But Fallout 76 just does not seem like any of the stuff I look for in these games is here. And so until like told otherwise, then like a final version where it's like, actually, like if you do like these five things, you can, it's a cool arc. But absent that, I don't know.
There are going to be those things, right? Because, like, I can already tell you, oh, yeah, here's a cool character who is, like, she was a PhD student in sociology who joined this group called
But it's all in diaries, right?
It's like, all diaries.
Then I could then give me a PDF file.
Yep, totally. And the other half of this, too, for me is just, like, there is something really, I like taking my time with these games, and I like to keep an open mind about franchises. I was the person who, I had friends who were like, ugh, Resident Evil 4 isn't a real Resident Evil game because it's not slow and meandering and scary in the same way that 1, 2, 3, you know, and Code Veronica were or whatever. It's this action game. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, but like Resident Evil is just a title you're putting on a thing. Or with the BioWare stuff, right? With like BioWare and Anthem and moving in this new direction. I'm fine when development teams want to take a new direction and want to try to play inside of the space of a franchise without doing what they've done before. I think as long as they're honest and open about that, I want to encourage that experimentation. So I want to encourage this. But like when I sit down to play this game and I go to a public event about killing the zombies in a power plant and repairing it, and I'm like one of two players trying to do it and dying and going on corpse runs to get my gear back, and it's a like a 45 minute long timed public event that I like just I figured something out with 30 seconds left that let me finish this event after investing 44 minutes of like I was making continuous good progress through that 44 minutes, and then I was like, okay, well, in previous Fallout games, if I'm in a dungeon or if I'm in a facility, if I'm in a vault where I'm like, oh, this is too high level for me, I'm going to get the fuck out of here, I can do that and come back at my leisure. But the fact that this event had a timer on it was like, well, I've already dumped in 30 minutes. If I could just push through and figure this last little bit out, I can do it. And I managed to do it like seconds before the end of it. And then I think maybe that was one of the glitches. It glitched out while it was supposed to be giving me the next step, and it just didn't do that. It was also near the end of the demo or like the beta period. So they might have had a trigger in it that was like, don't give the next step. Like they started to, it popped up on the screen. It was like, well, next go do blah. And then it disappeared. Mm. Here's the other thing is, like, I'm the person who does, like, the crafting in Fallout 4. I built, like, a really cool base. I built cool basketball courts and a little, like, a jazz club. And, like, I like that stuff.
Yeah.
But I like that stuff and because it interacted in some way with the rest of the fictional world. It wasn't really well integrated. If I went back now to Fallout 4, there's lots of mods that would help that integration really, really live and breathe. But, like, I could, in my head, tell the story of my home base with my NPCs, where I was building a place for people to live in this world. Here, I can't really convince myself of that because I know that that's not the case.
Yeah, maybe the immersion. I mean, in Fallout 4, it is wholly yours.
Yeah,
like there is no one. The world is only going to react to you, and so you are in a direct relationship with that game that is mutual. It is you know. Giving back to each other, but with the addition of like all these other players, I wonder what that interactivity or what that reaction is going to feel like.
It's already weird. Like, I don't like seeing. So, I played a bunch of Elder Scrolls Online before, and I think that's a game that has a lot of good writing and some really cool characters in it. And also, I hate seeing 30 other people running around with the same gear I have on, talking to the Daedric god of whatever, as if, like, it makes that not a special experience. So I understand that they're actually sidestepping some of those issues, right? Where, like, I don't want the Fallout game where it's 30 people standing in a circle around the one Brotherhood of Steel quest giver either.
Yeah.
But what I would have wanted is, like, I think about Fallout 4, a game that I have issues with, a game that was, I liked it more than a lot of people, but I had serious issues with the storytelling in it, and it's serious issues with kind of some of the game design elements. The performance was rough and all of that. But if you just let me play through that game with a friend as it was, I would have had a pretty good time. And
like co-op?
Yeah, just a co-op mode with like me and two or three other people would have been fantastic. Here, it feels like Rust with the hard edges sanded down because, and again, I played for 3 hours, so who the fuck knows? But like, it's a strange feeling in terms of what the progression mechanics are, mixed with what the cost of dying are, which are very limited, mixed with the feeling that you're supposed to be the survivors out in the wilderness. I don't know. We'll see how it shakes out. I'm gonna keep playing it. The guns feel good, as game critics often say. VATS works in a way that's kind of neat in that it doesn't pause time at all, but like you get an automatic lock on when you hit it, and then you just like, oh, I'm gonna shoot a bunch, and like there's a percentage chance to hit, and that's really useful when there's like a ghoul up in the rafters somewhere and you're having a hard time shooting. You know, I like all of the weapon upgrade stuff, but like it's not scratching that core big itch for me, which is about storytelling.
Something I'm curious about is just how does it feel to like inhabit this world, to be exploring these spaces? Because something I noticed, like, even with a Fallout 4, is that it has that trademark, like, Bethesda games are tuned to look great from a distance, but when you get close to them, everything in the levels tends to look like when you walk onto a movie set or something, or like you get too close to theater props and you realize that they're 9/10 illusion and, you know, a good painting job, but there's no substance to them, there's no depth. And I think Fallout games, it works well when they're out in the open world and you're mostly looking at like vista after vista.
Yep.
But a lot of times, as cool as some of the narrative bits were when you delved into a vault or something, you were also in an environment that was clearly sort of that, particle board construction. Mm-hmm. And and the thing is, that's fine in a Fallout game because that's part of the bargain you make with a Bethesda game. I feel like that bargain's going to be different here, and I'm curious if, does it feel a little more like a proper open-world shooter? Does it still feel like Bethesda game, but multiplayer?
It feels a lot like the open-world vistas still land, right? Like, there are still moments of coming over a hill and being, oh, wow, that looks fucking great. There are moments where, and it's a beta, so who knows, but where, like, some of the assets actually undermine that. The natural assets look good, like the trees, the lakes, the river looks great. But there were buildings that I looked at were like, what is this? Like, this looks like it's from Fallout 3. And again, like, I'm not the person who makes those. I'm not talking about, this isn't Puddlegate. I'm not saying, like, there's not enough puddles here. I'm saying I literally was like, did the texture not load in? What is happening? And no, the texture loaded in. It was just not a particularly, it looked like Lego blocks. It looked like a big weird teal Lego building. Mm-hmm. It was very weird. I'll show you the photo later. But more importantly, the interiors super don't work for me outside of small ones, right? Like, walking to a diner, that works because, like, they do a decent enough job. Be like, oh, here's the record player. Here's the old, like, automatic thing that lets you get a piece of cake from the vending machine or whatever. Here's the seats that are out. Here's the skeleton on the toilet who's died. Oh, no.
Right. reading a book of jokes.
Reading, exactly. Yeah, exactly. As usual. Yeah. Some of it gets dark. Some of it gets, there's like, obviously they're like playing up. I found an audio tape of someone who was like, please help me for like 2 minutes in a row. I was like, all right, cool. Some of the audio tape stuff is actually very, very hopeful and like optimistic and is about like perspective of coming together and helping each other and stuff too, obviously. But what really doesn't work are the bigger interiors, like the power plant I was talking about before, for two reasons. One, I don't know that those interiors have ever been good in terms of level design. I think about my favorite, like, dungeony things in terms of vaults in the past games or in terms of different locations, and they're cool because there's cool narrative stuff in them, but they're rarely cool in terms of feeling like, I think Prey, a game I have issues with, does this super well. That there is like a logical layout to this building or to this space station. When I go into a space, I come to understand it and learn it and internalize the logics of why it does what it does.
Because it's contained.
Yeah, totally.
In,
well, like, yeah.
But it's also
color-coded
in certain ways. It's also art-directed in certain ways that like guides you through in a very particular experience.
100%.
Yeah.
In Fallout games, there's often the case that, like, why is this door locked and none of the other doors are locked? Like, there's a door that looks just like this that opens one floor down from here, but here it's permanently sealed and there's not a key for understanding that. And so a super important thing in regular Fallout games is the local map. Because you're like, okay, this is where this is a loading. This door is a loading screen that leads me down to the sub level. Okay, this door is permanently locked. This door is not permanently locked. Okay, I see where I am. There is no local map in Fallout 76 that I can find. So I'm in the middle of this giant power station, and I have no idea how to get out of it. And I learned I have to get out of it to do this final step. I spent genuinely 15 minutes wandering in circles looking for the door out. The only doors out I could find were locked behind level 3 hacking gates, which I couldn't even try to hack. So, like, the already troubling and kind of like lackluster design stuff is emphasized when you're not given the tools to navigate those spaces.
Yeah.
So, that's my opening thoughts on it anyway.
If this probably ends up being what I think it is, which is not for me, I do think it's a potentially interesting milestone along the way to Bethesda shaking up how they make these games, though.
Totally.
Because I can imagine a world where... What's this, the next one? Starfield? Is that what it's? Starlink?
Starfield.
That's Ubisoft's game, yeah. where it's not what you said before about a Fallout game, or let's just say a Bethesda open world style game in which you just... draft on co-op, right? Because that's probably not what they would end up doing. But is there somewhere where it's like in between this, where it is like I get what I want, or what a lot of us sounds like we want, like a big, meaty, story-driven single-player RPG with lots of interesting characters and locales and world-building, but also not getting away from, somehow maybe getting away from, like, you the hero, and there is no one else in this world that has, takes actions other than yourself.
Right.
Some way where they can, like, meld in some public,
so that you don't end up being the leader of the Thieves Guild, the Fighters Guild, the...
Right.
So the world isn't just built around you.
Yeah.
In a way that can, as Natalie said earlier, like, can make you feel important and good, but also in the way that Patrick's talking about, which is, like, it ends up being kind of repetitive and it doesn't feel like a real
You're
world.
Just doing a checklist, right?
Yes.
Like, whereas, like, what if, you know, there were, like... It was like faction-based, right? Where it's like factions have a push and pull that are based on things that are having privately in your instance game, but then have spillover effects onto the public. There are just I'm hopeful, given that part of the reason I didn't respond well to Fallout 4 was because it just felt like a less good version of a game I'd already played. Like, they hit Fallout New Vegas and Fallout 3, which were like, they did it, and then Fallout 4 was just like another one of those in a way that I found really just boring, honestly. It was like I say bad when I really mean boring. I think boring is bad from expectations for like a lot of things in Bethesda games, like the storytelling in particular. But I think there's a world where there are some important lessons taken away from 76 and some integrations that make me potentially super excited for directions they could take this and Elders. Like, the next Elder Scrolls, like, I don't want just another Skyrim. Like, as someone that's not super invested in the lore of the Elder Scrolls, but played 120 hours of Skyrim despite, like, not being into high fantasy, I'm excited by some potential things that could come from this experiment that will ultimately make it worthwhile, even if... I think a lot of people are scraping for reasons to be interested because they know theoretically this means a new proper Fallout is maybe 10 years away, is 8 years away, like is a long time away. And so like the prospect of like Fallout going out with a multiplayer game that is not for you or what you wanted out of Fallout is kind of distressing and a bummer. But as someone that has found myself pulled into other parts of Bethesda games, despite not necessarily being necessarily buying into the setting alone, I'm hopeful that maybe there's a world where some of this stuff kind of starts working in tandem in a way that's really interesting.
Yeah, I'll say there was something about going in and turning on the radio and immediately hearing songs from the 30s and the 40s that I was like, man, I want a new one of these that I really, really like. I just want one. It would have been nice to have one that hits this stuff in a way that's exciting and that is developing some new ideas. And I think you're right. I think this is the right step forward for them in the sense that, like, it gives them a space to build on their core design ideas and figure out if there's new ways for interaction between players and factions and maybe making building stuff more enjoyable for the rest of players, for people who aren't just like, oh, yeah, I want to build a cool basketball court. And, yeah, we'll see. I also just have no idea what this project looks like internally for them. Is this – do they think this is the next big thing, or is this something that came out of an internal jam a year and a half ago and then they dedicated resources to it because it was pretty cool?
It's like Epic's Fortnite.
Right, exactly. That's the question.
Like, it could be like if this ends up being just like a mild success that we don't hear much about except like in the way that Elder Scrolls Online
– yep.
And we, like, you get an update about Fallout 76. Like, the difference is, like, E3 next year. Is it just, like, an update on Fallout 76? Or is it, like, holy shit, Fallout 76 turned into, like, a phenomenon for us, and it's radically reshaping how we even think about building games?
Yeah.
Those two paths are available. Because it's not going to be a failure. It's just a matter of how much of a success it is and how much does that end up, like, influencing the rest of Bethesda's portfolio in the years to come.
Totally. All right, let's take a very quick break because we have to change batteries on a recording device. And then we will be back after that with more, a lot more, more zombies.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
We are back, and in the time since that break started, we've done a lot of diplomacy and politicking inside of the world of subterfuge. I cannot believe it.
And the real world.
And also the real world.
Yes.
Fuck. This game is going to kill me. A game that won't kill me, because I probably won't play it much, is Blackout. Blackout I've played a bunch of in Call of Duty Black Ops 3. 4. 4. I always say 3 because it's vertical lines.
Yeah.
And those only go up to 3, but Call of Duty was like, nah, we can do Roman numerals different. We're just 4 vertical lines.
Yep.
Fuck off.
We can all agree you nailed the segue, though, Austin. I mean, that's the...
Swish, got it. This is why I'm a champion. Natalie, you've been playing some zombies mode.
I also have to own myself for a brief second.
Please.
So the other day, this weekend, I went to go get my nails done. And I was like, oh, what color should I get? I want to do like a pumpkin color for Halloween. And then last night I booted up Call of Duty.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy. And my nails are Black Ops color.
I noticed that color.
That's amazing.
They're Black Ops colors.
It was a Freudian polish.
It's fucked up. I can't look at my nails without being upset now because I just see.
Because you're a true gamer.
But are you really upset, okay, or are you kind of, like, proud that you're, like,
no, I'm
true
upset
gamers
because zombies is
up.
Bad.
Oh! What if you make this a thing, though? What if going forward you're like, whenever there's a new release, I gotta get those Red Dead nails next?
Oh. Well, I'm into that. I like coordinating my nails to whatever...
A life event, so whatever your obsession is.
Yeah, exactly. So,
well,
this
when
is
you
the
join
Black
our
Ops
next
phase.
Subterfuge game...
Yeah, I'd love
what are
to.
The subterfuge colors?
I'll just pay attention to what color your nails are to figure out which of the other players you are. That's my play.
I could do contrasting colors.
That's true.
I could do an aesthetic build.
Damn, an aesthetic build. God. All right. Well, tell me about zombies.
So
stop owning yourself and tell me about Black Ops 4 Zombies.
Own that instead.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to. Black Ops 4 Zombies is bad, y'all.
Oh, no. You're like a big zombies fan,
I
right?
I am a bit. Well, not of a lifetime love of zombies, but I really got into it in the last game, World War II. The last zombies mode in World War II, I forget what it was called, but it was basically it takes place in some sort of like German village, and you are the Nazis have one last trick to fight the war, and it is the undead. And so they
seems like they could have done that earlier.
Yeah, they they were really waiting till the last second, and then they made zombies.
They had to have a moral line somewhere. Exactly. And I guess it was zombies, is weird, actually. I don't think that one adds up.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So, but the way that the map is spread out, it is super open. You have a lot of, like, open areas where you can kind of, like, corral the zombies. You can, like, kite them into nice little lines for you to shoot them down. You can, moving through the map feels like super coherent and good. And I don't know if that's
how many maps are there? Are there like standouts?
This is World War II. In World War II.
Oh, wait, so there's different.
Yeah, each zombies mode has a different map that goes with it. So this was like the main story zombies mode that I played last year. And I don't know if it was just how many hours I spent playing zombies that made it feel so coherent. But playing this zombies feels, first of all, the story is so fucking bad. It is so, and listen, I'm not coming to zombies for the narrative. I'm not coming to zombies for the lore. But
sounds
this,
like you are.
I mean,
can't be
just
disappointed if you didn't have expectations in the first place.
Yeah. True, but it is so just like it like bashes against my brain.
So no, not
this dishonors Dead Snow. I will not. Oh. I will not abide this.
Hey, Dead Snow was all right.
This is there are no Nazis.
Give me the setup.
You start off in this like bullpen almost. And it opens up.
Okay.
It's the new meta.
Okay.
It opens up, and you're in a gladiator ring. And you have to fight off, like, a couple waves of zombies. And then the ring has four branches that go off of it. And then when you go off the first branch that you're supposed to, after you get enough points to open the door, you enter each branch goes to a different temple. The temples are dedicated to different Egyptian gods.
Wait, where's the Colosseum at?
Who could say?
Okay.
It really makes very little to no sense. Which again, like, I'm not, like, coming to like, the last...
No, but, like, this just doesn't sound like...
It doesn't make any sense. It's
didn't
like
one of the zombies DLCs go to the moon, though?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds fun as fuck.
And one of them was a haunted theme park in the 80s.
Haunted theme park.
That
we've
one
had,
was cool, right?
We've had...
Is there a boat? I heard there's a ship that people like a lot. Like a Titanic.
Yeah, so that's in this one.
Oh, okay.
That's in this one. They also, there's been ones where there's like giant robots that you have to go inside their feet.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
That's what you have to do. You have to go inside their feet.
Yeah, that
to make the ultimate weapon.
That adds up.
Ah, feet, the ultimate weapon.
What? We don't have to pander all the time.
I'm not pandering.
We're not raising money for charity right now.
We are not. Okay, so anyway. The thing that I'll say that I really liked about the last zombies is there was no, which is not typical of most of the zombies games, is there was no maintenance. Like, you didn't have to run around, like, rebuilding the windows
like the
or whatever, like,
stuff.
All the barriers.
Okay.
There was zero maintenance. So all you had to do was just... like, do the Easter egg. There was no sort of... Which also meant you had a lot more zombies coming around, but it made sense because you... There was, like... I don't know. I keep coming back to the word coherence, but there was, like, a nice flow to the way that you moved around the map.
Yeah, sure.
This one, in the way that it... you have to build, which I hate, because I hate... going back to places that I've already been. I like moving forward in like some sort of like not linear but just like in a general flow, and I don't like having to bounce back and forth when things feel unbalanced.
Uh-huh.
And some people really love that. Some people love that part of zombies. They like to, you know, do the reinforcements and stuff. But yeah, it just doesn't, it feels a lot more claustrophobic than some of the past maps have felt. Like, this feels, there's a lot of really small corridors, and the way that the map is set out is like there's the ring in the middle, and then the four towers, and then there's like bridges connecting the towers at the top, and then the towers have like stuff below them, like a bunch of rooms below them. But all the rooms are pretty much like square, and then there's one other ring room. And so the only room that you have a lot of room to like kite the zombies in is the other ring room.
Okay.
And so it just feels like you're kind of like it's very vertical and it's not as horizontal as the last map. So it just doesn't feel super great.
That's a bummer.
It is a bummer because I had a lot of fun with the last one, and I don't know if it's just I don't know it yet. Like maybe it's just that I don't
like
know the map.
20 hours from now, you'll be like, oh yeah, it's actually great.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't really see myself doing, but I'll like they changed up the perk system. They changed up the like abilities system. It's everything is different, and I hate it.
Have you messed around with like Vermintide 2 at all?
I've never played Vermintide 2.
I'm curious because that's a game that scratches similar itches in terms of like. I suspect that would be a game that gave you that feeling of forward progress a little bit more.
It's more like Left 4 Dead than it is.
Yeah, zombies, but I think maybe. there's a Venn diagram there to some degree.
Yeah.
It's a team-based thing where you're killing a bunch of stuff and moving through a cool map and looking for stuff.
Yeah.
I guess it doesn't have the same, like, the zombies modes always have weird, like, puzzle mechanics, too.
Yeah, I love the puzzle mechanic. That's, like, my favorite part is you know, running around, collecting the things, doing the... Like, getting that sort of response from the world that, like, I am doing an action and then the world is shifting around me. And, right. And well,
Vermintide has that.
It does. Yeah, you should...
Like,
you
it
should
doesn't have puzzles. Like, so if, no. if the appeal is, like, a set... Like having that raid experience of, like, okay, what do we do next? That's probably not it. But, like, there's a lot of Left 4 Dead style, like, bring the MacGuffin to the what's-its and make some shit happen. And kill some rats along the way. But, like, I think where it suffers in comparison is Call of Duty, you're still working with a game that fundamentally feels very good, very, like, deliciously well-tuned.
Yeah, I did not like playing Vermintide 2.
Yeah, it feels super loose. So, like, the thing I really admire about, like, zombie mode, for instance, is, like, just the way the zombies move and the way that interacts with you trying to, like, get a shot off with a powerful weapon feels really good and rewarding when you nail it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The zombies are faster this time also. They feel a lot faster.
I can't fuck with fast zombies. Mm-mm. They're too scary.
They're too scary. They
They've been training
slower.
That gladiatorial
arena.
That
makes sense. That makes sense.
They made gains.
Finally. There's an echo of me coming from somewhere in the world. Okay, there, it's
That's
gone now.
Second Austin.
Second Austin.
It was Zombie Austin.
All along. Rob, you've also been playing something. Rob and Patrick, you've both been playing something with, maybe not with zombies, but certainly with some supernatural elements. Is that right?
Yeah.
Call of Cthulhu. That's the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, Call of Cthulhu. Oh, there's two Cthulhus coming out, right? But this is the first one. Isn't there a second Cthulhu game
Call of Cthulhu
coming?
2, Electric Boogaloo. Oh. Out this fall.
The Sinking City.
Yes.
Right.
The Sunken City.
Which one is Frogwares?
Sinking City.
This one is not Frogwares.
This is Cyanide.
What did they make?
They have made a lot of games that aren't very good. Okay. Cyanide are one of those studios, and I'm not entirely sure what the characters they
make. They're the people who made, like, of Orcs and Men and Styx, Master of Shadows. And
I heard
they
Styx
do, like,
was all right.
Yeah,
people
totally.
Like Styx.
People like Styx. Hey.
I mean,
hey.
They're useful. Multi-purpose.
You do a lot with the stick.
They also...
Rob, I thought this was the other game, though, when I loaded it up.
Oh, did you? You thought this was, like, the open world, goofy...
Well,
I
had heard so many good things about, like, the Sherlock Holmes games, which I have not played, but I've heard that they're, like, legitimately interesting and fun.
And this feels like those.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Okay, what's that mean? You okay? We should be clear. You're allowed to talk about like the first 3 hours.
The first
of the game.
3 hours, yeah.
Talk. Tell me what that is. Tell me what happens.
Well, Rob, I liked your line of that it runs. It walks a fine line between what interesting and inept.
Yeah.
Jeez.
but like that's
okay. No further elaboration on that.
No, I mean what that is like. It's a game that like in one moment. You're like, what is? I don't understand what this game is doing. And another one, we're like, oh, okay, all right, like, there's enough there that I'm going to see this thing through. Like, I want to see where this game goes. I want to see what it does. Like, the setup is that, like, you're a down-and-out detective who works for he's a contractor under, like, a larger detective company. He is not doing well. Like, one of the first choices you have in the game is, like, to drink or not drink. This takes place during, like, the Prohibition era. Prohibition, I think, is just passed, I believe, in this era. So that, like, kind of colors, like, some of the characters and environments you come across is, like, how the different areas are dealing with the notion of Prohibition. And then he gets a phone call that says, like, hey, you need to be taking more cases. There's a lot of shit going down. Like, take more cases. And then someone comes in with this weird painting in which they want you to investigate the true nature of how this woman was killed. And the painting has, you know, looks Cthulhu-esque, for lack of a more specific sort of term. It's kind of weird and warped and creepy. And then, of course, he takes the case, and then you go off to an island off the Darkwater, off the coast of Boston, that is like a failed once thriving whale town that did all sorts of hunting.
Whaling town.
New Bedford.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And the whales have dried up, and the island's not doing well, and you're there to try and figure out what kind of fucking weird ethereal weirdness is happening.
Mm. I just had to clarify it was not in fact a whale town though, where it's like, you know, hey Mr. Orca, like, so he takes off a little like derby or something. Anyway,
Lord. That'd be great.
The word I used, I just remembered, it wasn't interesting and inept. It's endearing. Because I don't think it's success. Yeah. Like, when it succeeds, I don't think it succeeds on the level of, like, holy shit, what was that? I am surprised. And it's more like, it's nice in its familiarity. It's like, ooh. Oh, yeah, you look at that Cthulhu-y nonsense. You really got that. Like, that sure does look ancient and weird. Way to go.
It's got a tentacle.
Yeah. And
all right.
It's not really effective, and I'm not sure this whole horror aesthetic can really be that effective at this point because it's so
it's way too
laid
familiar.
Out. Yeah. But there is still something kind of like cool when you look down the dock, for instance, and you see a bunch of these like the models like are detailed but also like kind of crude and look a little rough. So you look down this like eerie wharf. And you see these characters all mired in the uncanny valley. But somehow that makes the tableau before you of them, like, looking at this, like, whale that just washed up, completely mauled on the shore, warning a cop, like, we don't want to fuck with this. Like, stop messing around with this thing. This is clearly a bad omen. When you see that from a distance through the fog and the haze, you're like, this is kind of the vibe I signed up for. And it's not scary or surprising. It's just kind of cool to see it, like, land for a minute. But then a second later, you hear these guys talking, and you're like, oh, yeah, this is not the varsity effort that we're seeing in a lot of ways. Like, the dialogue just loops endlessly, so the characters won't just have their exchange and then stop talking. They'll just repeat it. So that moment where it's, like, kind of cool and eerie as the fishermen are, like, yelling at the cop, that moment gets squandered because they start repeating themselves, like, hey, you shyster, stop messing with that whale, which is,
wow.
As we all know, how Bostonians sound.
Rob might have done some VO for this game, honestly.
The accents.
I love it. You should need to disclose that, though,
shysters.
Actually.
Shysters.
What? Is that a thing? Is that a thing people say?
No.
Shysty?
No.
People say shysty, but that's more, I could imagine someone in like a Southie accent calling something shysty.
That's shysty, Jay.
Yeah,
I never
I don't
heard.
Know, Jay.
No, more of a New York thing.
I don't know.
I don't know that, like, I've ever heard shyster used this way. Just as, like, a common everyday, like, somebody just being an asshole is a shyster. Like, that's not, like, is in my, like, I'm not sure that's how that insult was even used in the time. But the other thing is this. The accent's all over the map. So there's, like, places where people are, like, straining to accomplish some kind of American accent. It's very, like, Agent Nam and Jaden type stuff.
Right.
But then somebody clearly was like, this is how people from Boston talk. And so whenever one of these characters approaches an R sound, they just make a meal out of it. So, like, there's this weird forced American, like, nasal accent. And then it'll be like, Of course, we're here in Boston Harbor.
Yikes.
And I'm like, it's, man.
This is part of the endearing part, though.
Yes.
Right?
Okay.
Like, because, okay. Like, in some ways, like, the cheesiness is, like, part of the appeal. Like, it feels like I'm playing, in some ways, like, a B-movie. Like, I know what I'm in for. Like,
right.
Like, when the voice act, you know, like, the voice acting is mediocre when... The moment they start talking, they should just maybe have the models not talk, because it would be more convincing if they didn't move their mouths than in the way that they do move their mouths in this game. But, like, I know what I'm in for. Like, the game, like, in the first 5 minutes, you're like, oh, I know what this game is. And as long as you're okay with that, like, it's... I think it is hitting the buttons that I need it to hit. It's weird, though. Like, for... Rob, like, the systems in this game... Like, the game opens with you ostensibly having a character creation sheet in which you're like, here's, like, 8 points you can dump into things. But it's – this isn't, like, an action game. There is no combat. And so, like, the systems that you're dumping into are, like, for example, like, strength is, like, you can be aggressive during a conversation. Or
okay.
Intellect, where you can, like, outmaneuver someone intellectually to, like, sort of solve an issue. But you do this – with a bunch of points early on in the game in which you have no sense of, like, how that actually plays into the mechanics. Like, usually games will, like, have you go, like, be very specific about, like, how this is going to play out. And then even let's say, like, I dumped points into intellect instead of strength. I was like, just going to be a smarter detective. When you are presented with conversations, you don't have a sense of the percentage. It is just says, like, hey, give it a shot and, like, see what happens. And it just, like, is a pass or fail. But you don't have any sense of, like, do I have a chance at pulling this off? Should I go for something else? If I do this and it fails, is there an actual consequence? So I've, like, had, like, 4 or 5 different exchanges where it's, like, you can pick one of your quote-unquote strengths, and even when it seems to have failed, it does not seem to actually have had a consequence or, even when it has worked, I don't... Rob, have you noticed that it's actually done anything for you in the story? Like, it doesn't seem like the story has deviated meaningfully at all based on choices I have or haven't made.
I think I know who Austin is.
I think I know who Rob is.
Okay.
Jesus Christ.
Subterfuge.
So this Cthulhu. System...
We're going to be unbearable for the next week. Yep. Apologies.
So
I'm sick. I can't be on the podcast anymore.
The system is definitely weird. I'm not sure... I might actually kind of like it, though. Is the thing. I like that, for instance, like, it explains itself badly, but I think it is actually kind of clever in that your detective is going to be good at some detective like type tasks, but not good at others. And somehow the game is going to let you achieve largely the same ends, but like, a thing you can do. Well, actually, I'm very curious about this. You can, for instance, improve your spot check ability, and you'll just see more. In the investigation
scene. Like the glowy objects that you can, like, interact with. Like,
right,
Witcher
right.
Vision.
Yeah, Witcher Vision. Yeah, they showed us that during the demo at E3. They said, like, when you walk into... So in the tabletop game, when you walk into a room, you would be like, oh, I want to roll to see something. And so you roll the dice to see it, and then, like, to see if there's any hidden clues here, right? Spot hidden or something. And you would roll it, and if you succeeded, your DM would be like, ah, yes, you find the scrap of paper with the name, you know, Harcraft on it. And you know, of course, that the Harcraft family, invented blah, 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 or has ties to such and such an evil cult. And in the demo that they gave us, they were like, all right, so you have that skill. So when you walk in a room, we roll that die to see if you see anything. And if you don't see anything... It just doesn't show up, and you cannot find it in that room. And if there's a success, it highlights, and you can go see it. And that was so weird to hear from me, the idea of, like, it's not enough to have the skill to see the thing. You could be dumping points into it and still get an invisible bad roll that you never know you got that bad roll and not get this piece of evidence. And presumably you can always move forward no matter what, but... Right. Does that feel any sort of way in the game?
Not yet, but it's clearly is, like, pumping into systems that will have some consequence later. That
gotcha.
Like, there's also, like, a sanity, not meter, but, like, okay. There is, you know, some semblance of, like, that will have their an impact later. There's only been one choice, which is the to drink or not drink choice, which says, like, your destiny has been affected. Presumably that, like,
I slammed that shit. Yeah. You see how I podcast.
I do see.
Hopefully, like, the game will start, it's only 3 hours. I don't know how long this game is. Probably 12 would be, my guess. Like, hopefully around halfway you start seeing these, clues that you do get, or more importantly, clues that you don't get, informing the story that plays out and your ability to solve certain crimes. I'm skeptical on its, it set up a bunch of systems, and I'm skeptical on its ability to pay them off, but they're interesting enough that I want to see it either succeed or fail, or possibly the way that it fails is still interesting in its attempt, which is part of why 3 hours in I'm still totally hooked and want to see more. And one thing I will say is, as a horror game, it also generally avoids fail states, or the fail states that it introduces are so milquetoast that it doesn't really matter. I don't know if that will change as the game goes forward, but I've made it to a point in the game where in the first 3 hours there are no failed states. You are just exploring. It is still creepy. There's a sequence where you have to run, but you can't fail it. You just go forward. And it is actually refreshing to play a horror game that is just largely about just explore and enjoy the space and investigate. And it's not an especially scary game. It's not an especially creepy game. I think partially is driven by the fact that it is less competently made aesthetically. And also because I think it's purposely going for a world where you are just not meant to be always looking. You're looking over your shoulder, but not in a way that's if you don't look over your shoulder, something's gonna come get you and you're gonna game over state and you have to start over again. The one sequence I've been to where you do have things kind of stalking the area, that maybe this is just the less competently made game feeding into this, but the AI is not very smart in a way that's fine. I can just kind of walk around them, or if they spot me, I just literally go behind a bookcase.
Did one almost
they just
spot you?
Move on. Huh?
Did one of them almost spot you?
Yeah, I got to a red state, which is they've spotted and they're looking for you. Literally all I did was go behind a box and they went away, which is fine. I actually like that the game, and this isn't a difficulty slider as far as I remember. It just is what the game is. I enjoy that. I love horror, but I also like the fact that this is a game saying that's not part of our experience. It's more about you being in the world and just enjoy that part.
Yeah, I enjoy the atmosphere of things like this. I think what I'm playing a game like this for is I'm exploring an old gothic mansion, and there's a thunderstorm out the windows, and the room keeps throwing up weird, creepy shadows. And, that's about all I need from this game. It does. I'm with you on the lack of fail states. It doesn't have that Outlast thing of, you're trying to soak up a vibe, but there's always some fucker just trying to come and shank you at every single moment. And eventually it's not scary. It's annoying. You're just can you chill for a second and let me soak in the creepiness? This game is all soaking in the creepiness, and it's about the idea of the danger more than the danger itself. I don't know if that's going to change, but the vibe I get from what I've seen of the sequence that follows that prologue is that this seems like a game that's going to throw up it's going to keep checking off those boxes, right? Do you like this horror conceit? We got them. And I'm here for that.
And also, just to be clear, unlike in much of Lovecraft's actual work, the horror isn't miscegenation. It isn't the races mixing or, right? They've done the job of...
it's early.
So far. Okay.
You would hope, but it's still the spot that both Rob and I are early enough that you're... The Lovecraftian stuff is still more on the fringes than it is at the forefront. Gotcha. It seems like that's all about to change. I doubt it. Seems like, almost any developer would be smart enough to lean into the aesthetic and more otherworldly stuff than, the much grosser parts.
It's so good, though. This game is so unsubtle. There's, you get this painting from this woman who, perished with her family in this mysterious fire. And her father is I feel this poem, this painting, is trying to communicate something. I feel like she sent this to me for a reason. It's literally a painting of her and her son trying to ward off a fucking demon. Literally it. She sent him concept art of the game, and he's
that's
like,
"Amazing."
You feel like this is maybe means something?
Oh my goodness! I love that's that. Fantastic. God, I'm really curious about it. I have issues with Lovecraft's work. I also have a history of playing the tabletop RPG with people who also have issue with Lovecraft's work and know how to tell cosmic horror stories that are not fraught in that way. And so I hope it turns out to be better than bad, because it's one of those things that I can spend it would be a good weekend game to play through, like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and play through something like that. Danielle, speaking of horror games,
yes,
and first-person games? Or
first-person
are these
not... games primarily, okay, in haunted cities.
Ooh. Tell me, is this one sinking, yes or no? How many whales are there?
I have not encountered any whales yet.
Okay.
But whaling is in itself one of the most horrifying
things. Yeah, it's rough.
Things.
I've read Moby Dick.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
And also poor whales.
Yeah.
I played Dishonored.
Whales are nice.
Those are the two. Those are my two touchstones with whales.
Yeah. You know,
Moby Dick, Dishonored.
The two whales.
The two whales.
The whale and the other whale.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's the name of my favorite China Melville book. The whale and the other whale.
Uh-huh. And one of them's wearing a top hat. That's the subtitle. Because, yeah, of course, mm-hmm, Mr. Orca.
It was only in the translation,
right,
though. So.
Right. Bonus material.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What have you been playing?
Okay, I have been playing Haunted Cities Volume 3.
Okay.
It is Kitty Horror Show's new little anthology,
awesome,
of games. It's four small games. I've played three of the four.
Okay. Can you set up who Kitty Horror Show is for people
absolutely
who have not, which is like a shame that more people have not encountered her work, but like, can you set it up a little bit?
So Kitty Horror Show is a creator. I believe she works alone. I could be wrong. She might have some collaborators, but
sure,
primarily makes very small, intimate, terrifying horror games. For the most part, often in first person,
mm-hmm,
often very simple looking, but with a really, really, really strong sense of style and aesthetic. So she's made games like Anatomy is probably her most famous,
yeah,
game from a couple of years ago, I think now, which was a horror game about a house and a VHS tape. And I'm not going to go too far into it.
Don't go any further than that. Yeah.
Fascinating game. And I've loved a lot of her earlier work as well. Like, she has made, this is her third anthology of Haunted Cities at this point, obviously, the volume three. But she's made a lot of just really cool, interesting places to be in and soak in the sort of atmosphere,
yeah,
and soak in the details. Very mechanically simple, as well as these games in this anthology. They are of a piece with that. You are largely exploring horrifying, terrifying, interesting, weird environments. And you're getting those environmental details either through sound or through sort of reading notes and things like that. Sometimes there are audio portions. There's one game here that is not first person. It is kind of the outlier. And it's almost a little bit more playful than some,
huh,
of her other work. You are playing as like a tiny little druid in a weird, it's a 3D space, but it's a third person view,
okay,
of like a little sprite of a little, it's like a little monk kind,
okay,
of walking around this wild Escher looking 3D space. It's basically like stairs that go everywhere, but it's not just stairs. It's also like different branching paths, and you are just sort of lighting candles throughout this world. There's other little monks that talk to you. Again, it's a little bit more playful than a lot of her work. A lot of her work is very, very, very dark, even literally dark, like hard to see dark, but
right,
in a really creepy and wonderful way. So I found that really interesting as a sort of one-off. But the
yeah,
other games, the two of the other three that I've played have been both first-person games. One of which, you're sort of exploring a sunken city, literally.
Oh, perfect.
I think it's a sunken city. Again, a lot of the art is very abstract. But it goes through some very dark themes. There's a content warning for implied suicide on that one. So just so you know, there are content warnings on sort of all of the games. Like, there are different sort of dark, horrific things that she's sort of working through in each one of these games. But that one really got to me. It was really, really deep and dark and sort of about exploring a small town, and it's sunken, and it's weird, and it's grim. I am in love with her work. I really love her work. I enjoy it on that level of, here is a place I want to explore and be, even if it makes me feel like my skin is crawling.
You think Anatomy is probably the best thing for people to pop
I think it's
it
probably
out
the most accessible,
never... yeah,
yeah, absolutely, of her games. Although, in terms of, I mean, not purely accessible, all these games are very, tend to be very easy to play, just
right,
in terms of, like, the themes, and, like, how much do you like really personal, simple games? You know, and how much do you like
versus
horror
things that are like layers and layers of mechanics? And, oh, I mean, I
yeah,
didn't bring this up because I got distracted by subterfuge.
I'm saying,
But The thing that hearing them talk about Call of Cthulhu reminded me of is a game we didn't really talk about on here this year, which is a game called The Council, which is a Telltale-style adventure game, R.I.P., in the sense of, like, it's dialogue-driven and there aren't puzzles in that kind of traditional... Well, there are some puzzles here or there, but it's not like an inventory puzzle game the way a lot of classic adventure games are. That it is sort of like a... You know, nods to Umberto Eco or at best Dan Brown at worst, I guess, in that, like, oh, you're going to this, like, ancient manor off the coast of England to meet up with all of these secret movers and shakers who are part of the secret society in Europe. And it is a, like Call of Cthulhu has a skill system. And this is what I'm contrasting with the Kitty Horror Show stuff, which is like you are moving through a space.
Yeah.
You are soaking in this
taking
place.
In
you're
details.
Taking in details. And that is the interaction and the play. In The Council, it's doing a lot of what they're talking about with Call of Cthulhu in terms of, like, all right, you have skills that open up possibilities, but also it's kind of vague in how it's shaping the future of stuff. But I did want to say that, Rob and Patrick, you should both probably look at The Council as something this year. Mm. I mean, I'm curious how that contrasts to the way Call of Cthulhu does this. Because there are lots of ways to tell stories and to tell branching stories and to create terror and to create tension. And someone like Kitty Horror Show does it through just like really sharp art creation.
Yes.
Through sound especially, right? Yeah. And through a certain like placeness. Whereas a game like The Council does it by being like, oh no, I'm in this debate with this character and my logic score isn't high enough. I'm going to get a negative outcome. Right. It makes it deeply systemic.
Yeah.
It's one of those games, like, I need to revisit it. I played the first part of it and have not gone back since, but want to because it's a weird fucking game.
Yeah. One last thing I would say about Kitty. This game is free. This little collection is free. You can download it. It works on everything.
Everything, yeah.
And kittyhorrorshow.itch.io is where you can find all of her work. So, yeah, if you want to – she has a Patreon, but, like, I think these were actually released sort of monthly on her Patreon, and here's a collection of my work. Like, go play it, everybody.
Cool. Yeah. I really like that model for creators, and we've done a lot of talking about what remaking the games industry would look like, and obviously this is not adequate for a lot of people who need a job with healthcare benefits and who need to make sure that there's, like, a strong degree of stability, but I really do love the model that is maybe even – increasingly more prevalent in the tabletop game space than the video game space, where you support a creator to develop things on whims and, like, pursue different projects month to month. You receive whatever they're working on, and then eventually those things can develop into commercial product or into free product, free games outside of that. Yeah, I don't think it's like, I don't know if that's the future of the world in general, but I do like it as a model for creators like Kitty Horror
Show. A type
of
artist or creator. Yeah, it does. It does seem to be like, this is really awesome. It's also awesome that anybody could just play this.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know, regardless of income. So.
I'm very interested to check them out because I haven't gotten into any spooky action yet this season, basically. Or
spooky action at a distance.
I know, spooky. Yes, there it is.
Is that where you're going?
That's God's basement. You just need to you know, skip a walkthrough and
go watch that stream. Don't. You know what? Don't. It's not worth it. Don't watch God's Basement.
Call of Cthulhu seems like a good bad game. God's Basement seems like a bad
game.
Bad game.
Return of Oberdin is a little spooky and is great, and people should play Return of Oberdin. Speaking of independent creators, primarily made by Lucas Pope, who previously made Papers, Please. We played a little bit of it on the stream. We played like the first hour or so, 45 minutes of it on the stream. It is fantastic. I played probably another 5 or 6 hours since then. It's a bigger game than you might think it is.
Oh, I thought it was supposed to be a shorter.
No, it's like 15 hours like, long.
Yeah. Because this game is so spoiler sensitive, very narrative driven, how do you feel about it being able to sustain a narrative?
I need to play through that whole game by the end of this week or else I'm going to not finish it.
And I also wonder, in a more like specific capacity, the mechanics, do they become repetitive?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, they don't become repetitive. They continue to develop. Though the mechanics don't so much as your... It's like another game. Subterfuge? Have you heard of Subterfuge?
No.
Oh, wait.
So it's
are you playing that right
I'm
now?
I'm playing Subterfuge right now.
Oh, nice. Okay, tell me about it.
It is... So Subterfuge is a game that has very light mechanical layer, but there's a lot of depth in the sort of spaces in between action. You know, there you don't necessarily need to mechanize something like alliances or diplomacy. You just have the basic framework for those things to take place in.
Okay.
The Return of Robert Din is like that, in that you have, so for people who have no idea what this is, you are playing an insurance adjuster in the 19th century, I believe, who is sent out to this ship called the Obra Dinn. And you have and your job is to figure out what the fuck happened to the 60 people who are on the ship when it left port. You have a crew register that has a list of all the names of the crew and passengers. You have a your own eyes and ears and feet and hands in that order. And you have a magical watch. You have a journal. You have a journal and you have a magical watch,
right, yeah.
Like a pocket watch, that lets you teleport back in time to the moment that someone died. You find
That's
a
convenient.
Corpse. Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. And it lets you go back and see what the fuck happened. It pauses. It's kind of a freeze frame, like a did you play Arkham Origins at all? I think that was the first of the Batman games that did this. Or if you've seen, like, it's like something out of like a sci-fi story, like Minority Report or something, where it's like, oh, you can walk around a physical space.
Oh, like Tacoma.
Like Tacoma does this. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Tacoma does this. Tacoma is, there's a movie that plays, right? Yeah. Like you're seeing people. This is just a snapshot. This is just a person holding a gun and pointing at someone and a bullet is coming out and hitting another person. It's like the first one. The first is like, oh, I'm getting shot.
Oh, exactly. Thanks, exactly. Rob.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. And so you go, okay, who is in this scene? And the goal for each of these things is like it puts a little chapter in your diary, in your book, basically, that says, all right, this is chapter 6. You're going to have all the chapter titles already. And then you go into each one, and it's like, okay, this is the moment where someone died. And it asks you, who is this person? How did they die? And in some cases, it's pretty easy because it's like, okay, this person, the dialogue that plays when you come into the sequence is like, ah, oh, I can't believe I'm shooting you. I, Mr. Smith, is shooting you, Brian, my dear friend. And that's like the very, very beginning of it, right?
That's how
and
Victorians killed each other.
That's it what is. They did. They were very aware.
I do declare.
I do, exactly.
Yes. Mr. Smith,
boom.
I am killing you.
And so you go, Mr. Smith shot Brian. Or at that point, you're like, oh, Brian who? Okay, I'm going to go through the list of the crew. Or you see Mr. Smith, who is that? And like, oh, okay, this person's named Mr. Smith. But very quickly, that develops into things that maybe reach a little further to where you're like, you know, Arlene, I promised you after I killed Brian with my own hands that, or I killed your brother by my own hands that I would, you know, I did it for a good cause or whatever. That's like the dialogue that you hear. And so you go, well, who the fuck is Arlene's sister or
my
brother?
Therapist.
And then you go in and you figure it out. You look at the last name and you figure it out. Thank you, Natalie.
It's almost my therapist's name is Arlene.
Is it?
Shout out to Arlene.
Oh, Arlene.
What's up?
Is it almost a tiny bit of her story or something?
Yeah,
like
100%
that,
in that it's
little,
right,
and you then, get a little so, detail each time. And,
bit by bit, all of that sort of very direct stuff completely falls away.
Okay.
And is replaced with deeply naturalistic dialogue around mutinies and poker games and something happening with this Formosan diplomat who's on board. And there's all sorts of like narrative stuff I don't want to get into because it's a game that I was on a Discord call with a friend while I was playing it. Like we had something else on in the background we were watching, and then also I was playing this. And every 15 minutes, I was like, holy shit! Because I could go into a new sequence and
so
be
good.
Shocked by something I saw immediately.
So
like,
good.
What the fuck is happening on this boat? It is fantastic.
I love that.
Bit by bit, and it ends up being this. A thing where you're like looking at the map of the ship to figure out, okay, well, this is the first mate's quarters. Does that mean that this is the first mate? Okay, I'm going to write down in my notebook that this might be the first mate. Or I'll say this is an officer, probably. They're wearing a nice hat. Probably an officer. Probably not a midshipman. Or then it's like, okay, I'm in the rigging. Okay, if I'm up in the rigging looking around, I bet all of these people are you know, in the top shipman section of the crew. And I get, okay, the beginning, one of them had a Russian accent. Which one of these guys looks Russian to me? All right, I'll write down this is Dimitri. Okay, I don't know that it's Dimitri, but it might be. And the game has this simple mechanic that makes me feel like a genius every time it happens, which is when you get three people right, when you say, okay, Brian was killed by the captain by choking, none of this is real. I'm going to say right now. Arlene died from an illness, and Jim got thrown overboard or whatever. It goes,
and Jim sucked.
Jim sucked. But don't worry, it says Jim sucked. When you get three right, the whole game pauses. And there's a music cue, and it goes like, ba-doom, like three killings or three deaths validated, three pieces of
Miyamoto's rule of threes.
100%. Yep. And the little box that you go in normally, the like menu box that you go in and you go like, okay, I think Jim got thrown overboard. It goes from being a menu box you can interact with into being text written in the book that like firmly says, you fucking got it right. Jim got thrown overboard and you feel like a genius.
That's right.
What if you fuck it up?
It doesn't tell you shit. Okay. And it does a couple of
things. What's to prevent you from just being like setting different combos?
There are 60 people and there are three long pages of different things.
So that'd be just an excruciating way to try to brute force it.
It would be excruciating, and the ways you'd be denying yourself the joy of figuring out alternative ways to figure. There was a sequence, and I'm not going to say what the thing was that I figured out, but there was a sequence that was happening where I was like, oh man, how the fuck am I supposed to figure out any of people A, B, C, or D in this? I have no idea. What is the scene for? I can't figure out anything here. And then I realized some other thing was happening off on the side. Because you don't have the full ship to explore all the time. You have little sections of the ship in that are kind of tied to the memory of this person's death. Mm. So like, for instance, if someone died outside of the room I'm in right now, unfortunately, I'd be like, oh no, that's sad. We might be in that scene having this podcast.
Right.
Mm. Right? And so you could imagine if you have a crew dial, if you have a list of all the people in this building right now, and you know four of them have the podcaster tag on them, they say, oh yeah, these are the podcasting team. You, the player, could come into this room and be like, oh shit, all three of those people are podcasting. I can figure out who they are based on the fact that they're podcasting and mark that. And there's a sequence of that happens in a way that gave me direct, perfect information about who three or four people were that it made me shout out loud. I was like, yes! Oh. Like, I know exactly who the fuck you are, Jim. It felt great.
Jim.
Yeah, until he got thrown overboard, in which case, but fuck him. It also does a good job of making sure that you know when you could theoretically do something and when you could not. Mm. Faces are blurry in your documents until the game knows you have enough information to make that deduction.
That's cool as hell.
Which is really cool. Yeah. And it's helped me like not get obsessed over stuff.
It's interesting that like based on the art style, like how much you can't like
yes.
how
which we didn't even talk about.
Yeah. Because the art style, I mean, if we did a brief stream of it, there you wouldn't think that you can actually deduce a lot of information from it because it is so. You want to talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah. So like it looks, it's a first person game. You explore a ship. It is all monochrome in a sort of. There's a word I'm looking for that I can't find.
Blue and green, right?
Well, it's like there's a bunch of different color options.
Yeah, there's like I'm looking at the screenshots. It like strikes an interesting balance between like early like black and white like monochromatic video game art and the sketches you'd find in like 19th century serials. It like
that's exactly
straddles that fence perfectly. It's really cool.
Yeah, what is that printing style where everything's little dots?
Etching? Oh, pointillism?
Pointillism. I guess but you know what I mean, that style of like professional newspaper pointillism, the sorts of like you know what I'm talking about.
I used to know this, but it's been ages since
like the Wall Street Journal headshots.
Okay.
Do you have etchings?
No,
he says he's waving me off. He's taking a drink and waving me off. Of course
he
does.
Rob Zachney.
Rob Zachney has etchings.
You know
he does. Yeah, it sort of looks like a Macintosh, to like. It doesn't look like a game like that. I want to be clear though, like it doesn't look like a game that came out in 1988 or 1983 because games were not big 3D explorable spaces like this. But
It's a game taking the aesthetic, but then putting it under the trappings of like 2018.
And I saw some great pushback from someone on Twitter, and I cannot remember who it was. I'm sorry. It's been a busy week. I can't recall who pushed this back. But was saying, like, I don't really get why this trapping has been attached to this game because it isn't – for them, they're like, this doesn't remind me of the games I played on these old computers. This isn't doing something that was done on those old computers. So I don't see why the connection is being made here. And at that point, is it just a cool aesthetic for the sake of a cool aesthetic that's kind of fetishizing this, like, the past in some way? And I think I'm getting to where I can make a counter-argument around the way we think about history and the way we think about the past and the way we think about the way in which memory is rendered to us. But I'm not quite there yet, and I want to keep playing the game
to
see.
Yeah.
I'm super curious to see if they ever pivot and, like, if it ever renders the game world differently, which could be really cool. We'll see. I'm really enjoying it so far, but I have to finish this week. Otherwise, it will not get finished because I will forget key details. Like, I have in the back of my head. Like, you just need to dedicate yourself a week and be like, I'm going to play through it.
But I feel like this is going to be the game that, like, a whole bunch of people that I know are going to be like, yeah, I meant to get around to it. I'll play it during my Christmas break.
Yep, totally. Totally. It's a little too long in the sense of, like, if it was Gone Home length or if it was Tacoma length, you could be like, oh, I'm just going to sit down and just knock it out. I'm going to have a long night of a gaming. I'm going to do a true gamer session, and I'll be done. But it's too long for that. Yeah. So.
This is a full week or a couple of days. And also, it seems like it's not... You know, it's not like a twitchy action mechanic based thing where you can like you can mentally burn out on playing it probably, where it's just like I'm just not making progress because I'm just banging my head against something.
Yep.
Where you actually have to give yourself breaks in between.
Yeah. You can walk through it. Like you can always make progress in the narrative space because you can always just go to a new sequence to see what's happening. And you can get the big picture of what's happening that way, which is by itself pretty interesting. But I definitely have a lot of feelings of like I don't want to advance yet. I know I could get more out of this scene in terms of being a detective. Rob, did you have something to add here?
No, it's just this looks to me like so exactly my kind of game, particularly in the – I am of the mind – I am not tired of reassembling like scenes from audio logs and found text. Like for me – I have a bottomless appetite for that. Like people who are like, I hate that this is like how immersive Sims tell their stories. I'm like, give me more. Just give me more of those like strange, eerie tableaus and like backstory revealed through like found documents and give me more of that. And this seems like it is going to sate that appetite.
100%. Speaking of sating your appetites, Rob, I hear that you're building cities again. Can you talk about that or can we...
commercial?
We'll be right back. Here's Rob to talk about contacts, which he eats to sate his appetites. No, we already did. We already did our ad break today. Who knows if there was an advertisement in there? Could have been. Can you talk about City Skylines Industries yet?
Yeah, embargo passed, so we're good. Okay. So this is me getting back into City Skylines after a pretty long hiatus. This is the city builder from Colossal Order and Paradox. And this was very savvily marketed a few years ago as like, this is what the new SimCity should have been.
Right.
And Colossal Order, for a little bit of backstory on them, made transit simulators prior to this. So their earlier games were called Cities in Motion, and predominantly they were about really tuning and micromanaging not a city, but like bus schedules and routes and tram schedules within a city. And like how many cars are going to be on the subway that's running at this time versus how many at midnight. That's kind of where their interests lie. This is their city builder, and it's very good, and it is very SimCity-like, but where they've tended to put the most emphasis is about optimizing the flow of life within that city. These are not games with like hard fail states very often. Once you get your city sort of up and running, it does tend to look after itself quite a bit, but they do promote endless tinkering. Mm-hmm. To sort of further optimize just traffic routes and how happy are people? What's quality of life like in this in your city?
Damn, can we give this game to Cuomo to get his hands on? Yeah. Just, you know, MTA could use a little optimizing.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Well, it posits a world where you have budget and political and endless political will.
Okay.
That's perfect. Good.
Yeah, you are the god king of
I will
your
remake the
metropolis.
City in my image. The tunnels will work.
Yes.
The trains will run.
Yes.
The flooding will stop.
Yep.
Yes. The rats will cease.
Is there flooding? Are there rats?
Anytime it rains, you ever see those like
rains.
I'm sorry, I meant in the game. I know.
I'm sorry.
I know there was flooding.
I was having flashbacks. I'm sorry.
You're having real life
flood.
Flooding.
Legitimate
you can
flood
flooding flashback problems. Okay.
Are there plagues?
You
can I make
fuck
Bowser step
disposal.
On my city?
there's no fetish like natural disasters you can like introduce into the like
Bowsette with her heel.
Yeah, exactly. And just tells you what a bad mayor you've been. No. So this game has had two like really significant expansions, and I sort of missed them both. The most recent one is called Industries, and its focus is about adding like a business and resource layer to the city builder. Previously, very SimCity style, the way City Skylines handled this is that you'd have your city layout and you'd zone certain regions for different types of buildings. And so you'd zone industry. And industrial buildings would pop in, and you had no control over that. It was just like industry was industry. And it would fill up, and there'd be jobs for people, and there'd be pollution, all that shit. What they've tried to introduce here is this notion that, in addition to your generic industry buildings, really the focus is on specialized industry. And what you have now are four, like, industry archetypes. It's like forestry, or farming, and some other one. It escapes me at the moment. But the idea is you can take raw materials off the map, and that's your sort of first step in the industry. And then if you have enough of those and you've invested enough in them, you can start building like second order facilities, so like intermediate goods, right? You're processing raw materials and adapting them into other forms that will be useful. And if you do enough of that, you start unlocking like higher tier buildings where you're producing like finished or consumer goods. And those are tend to be the most valuable. And the idea is just sort of building the sort of production scaffolding to the point where you can like have an advanced industry in your city. And it works, sort of, but not in a way that feels particularly satisfying. And that, and I need to put more time into it, but I think the weird thing is, this is a game that tends to be forgiving no matter what. Like, even for instance, like, no matter how bad you fuck up traffic, people still live in your city. They put up with it. It's like New York. Like, I mean, really, if you could be punished for bad traffic, like, huge sections of Manhattan and Brooklyn would be ghost towns by now. But people stay. People put up with it. The same thing happens in City Skylines, where you don't really see the exoduses happen that can really cut you down. And that makes it fun to experiment with. With this, though, you have this notion that you want to be matching up your inputs and your outputs and like getting this pipeline really humming, but it feels so loose.
Yeah.
That it doesn't.
Who cares?
Yeah. Like, if you produce too much wheat, you just sell wheat. You don't need it for flour. Just sell the wheat. Fuck it. It doesn't matter.
Right.
If you produce too much flour and your bakery can't use it all, you can sell the, flour. Like, it's all good. And it's not like, as far as I can tell, it's not like you can overproduce to the point where you, like, kill the pricing of a commodity and have, like, an economic collapse hit your city. And so, to me, this whole effort feels like it's an interesting effort to try to get at some aspect of life in a city. That, like, what's your economy? What's your city specialized at? What's its lifeblood? But it tries to do that through this kind of forced resource management game that doesn't quite fit the way Colossal Order build their games. And if you wanted to play a game like this where it's very demanding about like inputs and outputs, you'd probably be playing something, you know, a little more like Factorio or the Patrician games. Things where marginal costs and benefits are very important. If you fuck up a little bit, you enter death spirals you can't break.
Just remembered walking in to the Giant Bomb office years ago and seeing Vinny playing Factorio and just like having built this perfect like machine god on the screen of just inputs and outputs and conveyor belts filled with component parts and new computer chips that are being siphoned off and shuffled to another different it was like I walked into something that I shouldn't. It was Lovecraftian.
You felt honestly. You shouldn't have seen it.
I should not have seen.
I didn't know you were doing this.
Yeah, this is not my space. This is not your space. Yeah, this is a third space.
Also, Vinny was naked, so
You know, he was just trying to connect to the factory, however he could.
Yep. Yeah.
So, which fair.
So, like industry seems like an okay expansion if you just want more stuff for Skylines. What I'm actually getting much more into is the expansion I miss, which is Green Cities, which is much more about like sustainability and initiatives to sort of reduce the footprint of your city, which obviously for a lot of reasons feels a lot more timely and urgent than it has before. And I think Green Cities probably still relies a little too much on techno magic. Like, for instance, my wind turbines eventually, like, ran out of... Like, there's only so much wind you can harness to power a city in an advanced economy. So I just decided, well, what do I have here? Oh, a geothermal power plant, which I can just put anywhere. Anywhere.
Right.
And, like, we harvest energy from the Earth's mantle or whatever. And I'm like, I don't think that's how this is work. Like, I don't think that's how geothermal power plants work. I don't think that's, like, you can just throw one down in a parking lot and be like, yo, bottomless kilowatts. God. And that's kind of, like, the game relies on that in a few places, but I do kind of enjoy the way that this is very much a game about, if you want sustainability, if you don't want, like, massive pollution problems, you are going to have to trade off quite a bit. It requires a lot more careful planning to avoid sort of the big plays. Like, a coal power plant is cheap as hell and it produces a lot of energy. And that is an easy fix for when your economy scales past your energy production. To replace that thing, you have to be pretty clever about what you're putting down, what initiatives you start in the city, what kind of rules you lay down for power consumption. And so that part I do like. I'm much more interested in that aspect of it, of trying to tune a city that can run on green but less productive energy sources. That's kind of the cool part. And obviously a part of that is also creating a decent transit network, which is what this game kind of really excels at.
Right. Isn't that the history with the developer anyway?
They
started with, like, that sort of
transport. The Cities in Motion stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is that the same developer or is this actually a different developer?
Yeah, no, that's how I loved this off, Austin. Stop playing
Subterfuge. Okay, gotcha. My phone is not in my hand at all.
It's down. I see it down.
It's down.
It is down.
I'm always playing in my mind.
This is Subterfuge right now.
This is Subterfuge right now. This is Subterfuge and also looking at the news and being terrified.
No. Yeah, that's
not
great.
What this is. It's not great out there right now.
Nope.
Anything else this week? Any other games that we play? We've been going really hard. We've been playing a lot of games.
I just started Unexplored.
Oh, sick. You're playing on Switch?
On Switch.
Okay. Which I've heard is not the best platform for it.
It's...
I played a little bit, but not enough to talk to it.
I'm getting more used to the controller gameplay. I'm having a harder time just... I have not been able to get past the fourth floor.
Okay.
And also, I went back and I rewatched the stream that we did, like, however long ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Super long ago of Unexplored. And it just... You were doing, like, the daily challenges... Or you did the daily challenge for this, and there are no daily challenges from what it can seem on the Switch, which may be like a
it's still
PC
just like
versus...
a random seed, right? Like the way the dailies.
So I did not understand what the fuck seeds were.
Yeah,
and so I've been playing on the first seed every single time.
Oh, interesting.
And then so I've like gotten to know the dungeon,
that
and I like know it, yeah,
dungeon.
Very,
wow,
very well. So I've just like gone through and tried, and then I was like, "What does randomizing do?" And I randomized it, and I was like, "Where the fuck am
I?" That's amazing.
And so I was like, put back in one seed, and have been trying to figure it out.
That's a good way of learning, actually. If you commit. Like, because that way you know enough of, like, okay, there's going to be a bunch of fucking rats in this room or whatever.
Yeah, I know. Like, this room is pointless. Like, don't go in this room. Go. And, like, that's been really gratifying for me because I feel like I'm learning, like, how the systems are interacting more than I am when I just, like, drop into a new place.
Yeah.
But I still haven't figured out, because unfortunately the first seed that I've started on, I, like, randomly was like, more puzzles. And so, but I don't really know
what that means.
Puzzles are.
I think it's a lot of, like, bring this goblin vase to this pedestal and put it on there.
Yeah.
Grab the diamond key.
Yeah. I feel, like, just generally weak all the time. Yeah. Like, I feel super underpowered for, like, everything that's around me.
Like, especially compared to something like Dead Cells, which is also has roguelike elements where you're not... Where in Dead Cells, you're blowing through every encounter until you die.
Yeah.
Like, until the moment something goes so wrong that you are a dead person.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm beating the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
In this, you could every fight one fight orc is, and be like, yo, I can't fuck with this.
Yeah, every fight is a fight till the death.
Yeah, like, it's great. I
even
love it.
Just a horde of rats. Yeah. It's really fun. I'm having
spiders will fuck you up.
Yeah, spiders fuck me up.
Everything will fuck you up.
Yeah.
At least until you really get the controls down. Right. And again, I've only played a little bit on the Switch, and it works. I was just like so used to mouse and keyboard that it was difficult to make that switch. Yeah. For people who don't know, Unexplored is a top-down, like, roguelike action roguelike where you're kind of exploring and getting magical potions and gear and fighting stuff, and we've talked about it before, so I would say, like, do a search to see, like, maybe when I wrote about it or when I played through it. Watch
I think Jack DeKeet also wrote for Waypoint.
He did
about,
Yeah.
So there's a lot of Waypoint content on Unexplored.
There is.
There you go.
It's a good game. I touched Soul Calibur 6 a little bit. I don't have a lot to say. The story modes are weird. We have a review up on the site from Eric Van Allen.
Yes.
Should give that a read.
It's a good review.
It's a good review. It is. And we streamed. You should dig up the part of the stream where we made Gritty. That's really all I have to say.
I was very inspired by your Gritty.
Thank you.
Making.
Have you continued with Gritty?
I've not continued much with Gritty. Because that's not who I'm playing as in the story mode. And so
why not?
I don't know if I can
take Gritty
in. I already had a story
mode. To
the
end of the story mode.
Gritty deserves
Gritty
to live.
Gritty never left. Gritty's always been in.
Exactly. The Gritty's story is eternal. There isn't a distinct story mode. Gritty is forever. Gritty is now. Gritty is forever.
Yes.
Okay. Call of Gritty.
Oh, yes. My God. That's Gritty is what became of Samson.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Accurate. I think that's it. I think we made it through the game gauntlet. Welcome to the game gauntlet, everybody. I'm your host, Austin Walker, and today in the gauntlet, we have...
Game gauntlet!
The game gauntlet. We went in different directions. I don't know why. I went soft-spoken game gauntlet, and you went the right way, Danielle, which is definitely, like, dude bro.
Yeah.
Game gauntlet.
Game gauntlet.
We have all the Infinity Gems in our game gauntlet.
Get ready.
Get ready. There, yeah.
Totally. Those are my barks right there. I say do game gauntlet think, and get ready.
Do you think Gritty is just a contraction of the phrase get ready?
No.
Because Gritty's always ready? Gritty.
That was a strong no.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah, because I knew something terrible was coming.
That's fair.
Also, are you getting ready? Are you getting ready?
Are you getting
like,
ready?
You grinned?
You granny? Yeah.
Say it fast enough.
It totally works.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to go to the question bucket because I think I'm dying of burnout and exhaustion and subterfuge. So that's going to do it for us. Any final thoughts on this week?
Be good to your fellow humans.
Dobby the house elf, Harry Potter.
One more time.
Dobby the house elf, Harry Potter.
Yeah, that's they sound.
Dobby the house elf,
Dobby,
Harry Potter.
Those all say Dobby, Patrick.
Dobby.
Dobby the house elf, Harry Potter.
What?
Potter.
Dobby the house elf, Harry Potter.
That was drunk.
Dobby the house elf, Harry Potter. Dobby the house elf, Harry Potter.
Ooh, okay.
I'm gonna end on that one.
That was good.
Good. That was Patrick.
What
Klepek.
A weird website. Pronounce. Keep. It's a. You can vote on pronunciations.
Oh yeah, I've been on that website before. You can catch me on
You've
that
been
website.
Voting?
Trying to learn how to pronounce words before I say them out
Yo,
loud.
Everyone, go out and vote for pronunciations.
For pronunciation.
And also for our senators.
Yeah, and absolutely.
All that shit.
Yeah, it is time to push the vote, as it were. And I'm pronouncing, I'm pushing the vote that we say Dobby.
That's yeah, I also vote Dobby.
Dobby. I'm not voting for Dobby, though. I don't know enough about Dobby's policies.
Dobby's kind of dead.
Dobby's so, good, I thought.
Does Dobby die? I don't know shit about Harry Potter. Yeah, I'm sorry.
The politics of house elves are something we don't have time for on this podcast.
I don't know shit about Harry Potter, so maybe there's some shit that makes that okay at some point.
They're called house elves.
Nope. Nothing makes it okay.
Nothing
at
makes
all.
It okay. Hermione Granger actually founds a coalition. I forget what it's called.
She becomes an activist.
Yeah, she becomes an activist to free all house elves.
Does she succeed?
I forget.
How the fuck?
What's up?
Stop.
The whole...
You know who's firmly What's against that? The idea and wishes Hermione would stop talking about it?
Ron who's Weasley. That, Rob?
Oh,
I genuinely thought you were going to say J.K. Rowling. I thought she'd maybe release an update.
Wait, Ron is against freeing the house elves?
No.
Ron was a...
No. He just doesn't... He thinks she's being too noisy about it and it's making everyone feel awkward and weird. And
he's interrupting people at restaurants. It's very he just doesn't
I
think we should be a mob.
Ron. Okay, I already hated Ron. I hated Ron from the beginning. I didn't know about this.
Ron is just like, can we not do it tonight.
Wow.
Kiss my ass, Ron Weasley.
Can we not get into the whole free the house elves talk? I mean, just like, can we just have one night where we don't?
No, Ron.
And Hermione's like, no, you fucking fuck, Ron.
What is she?
My favorite quote from the sixth book. You fucking fuck.
No, you fucking fuck, Ron. Yeah, love
no, that's
it,
actually
love.
How Harry opens Order of the Phoenix. Just it's somewhere in that long rant. You fucking. It's basically like J.K. Rowling actually like David Mamet helped write that whole sequence.
I gotcha. Yeah.
He really made it sing. This is Alec before his Baldwin's right turn. Harry
Yeah. Of course. That's going to do it for us. I'm Austin Walker. Find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Find me playing Subterfuge as the color. Who could say? I don't know. I don't know what color my player is. I do think
what
I know
color
what color.
Color your nails, Austin.
Yeah, right? I think I know who Rob is, though. Rob, where can people find you on the internet?
Somewhere near Chongos.
Interesting. Somewhere near Chongos.
No, that's just a generic subject because Chongos is where it all happens.
I know.
We all,
it is where, that's what I've heard.
We all make the pilgrimage to Chongos.
That's okay. True.
All right.
Danielle, what about you?
You can find me at Danielle or I hating Ron Weasley even more than I did
that
5 minutes
ago. That guy
fucking
sucks, yeah.
I hate him.
He sucks.
Natalie?
At Natalie Watson.
And Patrick Klepek.
W-O-Self.
Perfect. Find everything we do, twitter.com/waypoint, waypoint.advice.com. You already know what it is. Danielle, on a week like this, what do we say to them?
Be good and be good at it. And free the goddamn house elves.
Also, shout outs to what do we, this is a Friday show, but it's a Monday show. Who are we?
Bowen?
Shout out to Bowen
and
Mello. Bowen.
Both of you.
Waypoint.zone/BOEN. Mello. TwoMelloMakes.bandcamp.com. Also, yeah. TwoMelloMakes on Twitter. All right, everybody, that's going to do for us. Peace.
But if we liberate house elves, won't their labor seem less special?
I hate it.
I hate it so
much. I hate it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.